Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I am your host, Rick Wolf. Well, on this morning's show, today is the day I'm going to talk about sports psychology. Now, I'm going to explain, or at least try to explain how it works, how it doesn't work, and how, especially if you're a parent or a coach, what you can do to help your athlete get a better understanding of sports psych. Now, you've heard me talk about my new book on the subject for a few months now, and to that end, I'm going to focus on some of the more salient and perhaps more the more surprising elements of my book. And by the way, the book is entitled Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed, Proven Techniques to Elevate Your Performance. It's a paperback. It's published by Skyhorse. You can buy it now either in print form or as an ebook, and it costs $18. In any event, what I thought I'd do this morning is to present some of my own background in sports psychology and then talk about some of the more common issues and concerns when it comes to the mental side of sports. And, of course, be happy to take your calls and questions at 1-877-337-6666. That is brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MoheganSun.com. So, let's begin. First, some quick history. Sports psychology is a relatively new science. In fact, I can tell you that when I was an undergrad at Harvard in the early 1970s and I was studying psychology, I was also, of course, an aspiring baseball player. And I wanted to find as many books and studies as I could about the mental side of sports. Now, this was, of course, long before Google and the Internet were invented, so there was no such thing as an online search. I basically went through the old-fashioned approach of library research. That meant going through card catalogs in several of the Harvard libraries. And to my amazement and frustration, there was only scant material on the subject of sports psychology. So there were a few articles here and there, and for the most part, though, sports psych was a really, this is again 1970s, was a brand new field that was really being practiced only in some degree by the East Germans with their Olympic athletes. And again, I realize if you don't know what the East Germans are, because that goes back a bit in history, you know, check out the, do some online work and check out East Germany and Olympic athletes. Interesting story. In any event, no one, at least in American sports, especially at the professional, collegiate, or high school levels, nobody was really involved in helping athletes when it came to their mental approach in terms of sports. It just didn't exist. So for whatever reason, I found this topic to be fascinating, and I continued to pursue it. And bit by bit, over the years, I was thrilled that the whole area of sports psychology began to grow. In fact, I did my honors thesis as a senior in college about sports psych and how top athletes tend to view the world in a different way than most people do. And I also earned my master's in psychology as well. And along the way, I played professionally in the Detroit Tigers organization as an infielder. When I retired from that, I started to coach at the collegiate level. I also started to write articles and books about sports psychology. In any event, one day in the late 1980s, I got a call out of the blue from a gentleman I didn't know. His name was Harvey Dorfman. Harvey explained to me that he had been working for the Oakland Athletics for a few years as their mental skills coach. This is when the A's had won several world championships. And he told me that he knew of my work and my writing in sports psych, and he wanted to recommend me to other major league teams. Now, as you might imagine, I was unbelievably flattered and thrilled beyond belief. I mean, to make a long story short, I was approached by several major league GMs, all thanks to Harvey Dorfman and his recommendation, and I ultimately decided to sign on with the Cleveland Indians. Now, for somebody who had a huge interest in sports psychology and in working primarily with top pro athletes, this was a dream come true for me. Spent the next 5 years working for the Indians in everyday contact with major league players, the minor leaguers, the Cleveland front office, and so on. Harvey Dorfman, by the way, spent years in baseball and worked as a sports psych coach for several major league teams and worked with literally hundreds of top players, many of whom went on to become Hall of Famers. Again, Harvey was the leader in this field in actually using practical application in terms of sports psychology. In any event, Harvey, as you might imagine, good friend, became my mentor. He was considered to be the preeminent leader in the field of sports psychology for pro athletes. In short, he opened the door for people like myself and others. I joined the Cleveland Indians in 1989. That was when the Indians were just beginning to rise and become dominant in the American League in the 1990s. And in working with them, I found that the players had many of the same issues and concerns that today's athletes have, which I'll try to cover a bit this morning. For example, are pregame rituals and superstitions, are they okay to have, or should you encourage them to be avoided? Is there a guaranteed way for an athlete to reach the zone, that rare stretch in a game where everything is just going your way, everything seems to slow down? As a basketball player, for example, you can't miss your shots. As a pitcher, you seem to have perfect pinpoint control, and so on and so forth. That's the zone. Every athlete wants to play in the zone. You've heard about visualization. Is it a good practice? Does it really work? What about making mental adjustments in the heat of battle? You hear commentators all the time talk about a player having to make adjustments in a game. What does that really mean from a psychological perspective? Okay. Come at me with your sports psych questions this morning. We're talking about my book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. And again, long before I got into the world of sports parenting, I was very much involved in sports psychology, and I continue in this field as well. But it's all part of the same process of the mental approach of dealing with competitive athletics and dealing with the issues that most athletes just don't come to terms with. I mean, as I said, this book is a book which I've meant to write for a long, long time. I'm absolutely thrilled that my good friend Ken Samuelson at Skyhorse Publishing shared my enthusiasm, and he acquired and published this book. And, of course, I send great thanks to Ken. It's really written to be accessible. There is no psychological mumbo-jumbo in it. It's written for direct application and use by athletes. And I think it's something that I hope that athletes and coaches will find very, very usable and will help clear up some of the misconceptions and concerns about what involves the whole mental approach to sports. You know, it's funny, and I get to the calls in a second, I've always felt that so many athletes just go out playing sports and the way they practice, they focus so much on the physical components of their game, whether it's their running, their calisthenics, their weight training. It's all about the physical skills, and yet we don't spend much time talking about the mental approach of what we're doing and how we go about our sports. And I think that's something that the time has come, and hopefully this book will help open up some of the ideas that athletes can really embrace and utilize in their own game. Okay, 1-877-337-6666 is our number. Let's start our calls this morning with our good friend Ed over in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're on the fan.
I'm cold, Rick.
It was like -4 and I got up this morning, Ed. It was cold, not really good baseball weather. So,
yeah, Rick, I think it's important today because all the athletes seem to be under pressure, whether they're looking to get big contracts or even on the college level succeeding, that sports psychology is important. And I can share an example.
Yeah.
My nephew, who plays at the University of Hartford, had a very good sophomore year. Last year, he struggled a little bit. Unfortunately, it ended 3 weeks with a season-ending injury. But the point was, he wasn't able to play baseball in the summer and all that stuff. And he did a lot of reading and a lot of soul searching with the sports psychology method. And just talking him over the highs before he went back to school, he seems like a totally different person where, you know, he's not in that attitude of worrying about succeeding, just going out playing the game and whatever happens, happens.
Well, you know, Ed, it's just mentioned before I took your call, we spend so much time in training our young athletes today on the physical aspects of their game. We don't really often talk about the mental approach. And, you know, it's only when it seems the kids begin to run into a little bit of a wall of adversity, they begin to sort of think, okay, what am I doing wrong? What's the concern here? And it's at that point they become a little more open to sports psychology and the mental side. And, you know, one of the basics is that, you know, you really can't always control the outcome of the game, but you can control the kind of effort you put into it. So if you're a ball player and you know, your idea when you go to bat is to hit the ball as hard as you can to hit a line drive somewhere, well, that's your goal. The line drive, as we both know, might be snared by the shortstop. So you might have a quality at bat, but at least you hit the ball and delivered on what you wanted to accomplish. The fact that the ball is caught by somebody, well, you can't control that. And those are the kind of things we want athletes to understand, that you do the best you can. You take care of the elements you can control, and hopefully the outcome will be what you want.
Well, another thing you were talking about, adjustments. And in baseball, you know there's adjustments because at each level as you go up, you know, they find your weakness, and they're just going to pound your weakness till you adjust. So, like, I'll work with hitters. And if, let's say, they're doing something wrong, and I'd say, this is what they're going to do to you in certain situations because of the way you're hitting, how are you going to adjust? I put it on them to give me the answer before I correct them on that.
Yeah, I you know, you hear that term so often, the making adjustments. And, Ed, I'll give you an example from my own history. You know, many years ago when I played in the minors, one of the guys I played against was a young first baseman named Mike Hargrove.
And I remember that name well.
Well, Mike was a great, great hitter, played many years in the big leagues, ultimately became a big league manager, even, for example, with the Indians. But Mike was one of these guys who, if you recall, his nickname was the human rain delay, because between every pitch, he would step out of the batter's box and adjust his hands, his batting gloves, his helmet, and look around the ballpark. And people would say, what is he doing? Why is he taking so long between each pitch? And I remember talking to Mike one day, and he said, Rick, when I was doing that, had nothing to do with my correcting my batting stance or my batting gloves or the helmet. I was using that time to make mental adjustments on each pitch. So I knew if I had been fooled on a curveball or a slider, I was trying to recalibrate my brain so I'm ready for the next pitch. And, you know, this worked for Mike. Mike played for at least 10, 15 years in the big leagues, and he was 300 hitters. So he knew that he had to make adjustments on each pitch. He just had to find a way to buy some time so he could do that. And that's adjustments. That's what ballplayers do.
Absolutely. And if you're going to be successful, no matter what sport you are, you got to be able to adjust, especially like in basketball. Well, everyone, if you don't have a left hand as a dribbler, they're just going to sit on your right hand to make you adjust and all that.
That's exactly right. And Ed, I you know, look, we both know that this is all part of the, as you say, going up the pyramid of competition. If you don't begin to confront and make adjustments in your game, don't worry, your opponents will seize upon you and force you to make errors and strike out and do things you don't want to do because you just didn't make the mental adjustment.
Ed, correct.
Let me run on. Thanks so much always for the call. I'll talk to you again next week.
All right, stay warm.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Take care.
Bye.
Let me take a short break. We're talking about sports psychology this morning and how it relates to kids who go through sports and how they prepare for their games and their competition. It's all based upon my new book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. I'm taking your calls and questions at 1-877-337-6666. Marco Belletti has your update. When I return, I go right back to the calls. Stay with me. And back here on Sports Edge, we're talking this morning about my new book, which I'm very excited about. It's called Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed, Proven Techniques to Elevate Your Performance. It's published by Skyhorse. It's a paperback. You can buy it in paperback form or as an ebook, and go to Amazon right now and order a copy. It's my work based upon 30 or 35 years in the world of sports psychology. Obviously, there's a great overlap with sports parenting as well. But I've really meant to write this book for a good long time. I was inspired by my mentor, Harvey Dorfman. Harvey passed a few years ago, and I always felt the time had come to finally put some of my thoughts and experiences and insights onto the page. And as I said, I'm excited about it. I've tried to write the book, try to avoid all the psychological mumbo-jumbo that so many of the other books on sports psychology unfortunately seem to have. This is really aimed at the athlete who wants to know, okay, how can I make my mental game better? How can I better prepare myself for my competitions? Talk about everything from visualization, whether in fact that really works. What about the stock advice that parents or coaches always give kids in a tight jam? They say, just take a deep breath. Does that work? What about dealing with anxiety before the game, superstitions? I mean, all the kind of basic things you would want to talk about if you're involved in sports psychology and their mental approach to your game. 1-877-337-6666. That is our number. Let's get back to our calls. Let's go to Barry out in Long Island. Barry, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hi, this is Gary from Long Island.
Gary, I'm sorry. How are you, Gary?
Hi, is this Rick?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Rick, I had a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I've got a 17-year-old son, junior in high school,
yep,
who's being looked at by some big D1, D2 schools,
mm-hmm,
for college ball, and he's a right-handed pitcher. And recently he's been on tour along the East Coast with his organization, and he was put on the mound to face some D1 JUCO teams, and they played him in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And he did really well. In fact, he was on the mound when they defeated their first JUCO team ever. So he's on track that way. And the reason I'm calling is I'm starting to hear some self-doubt creep in, you know? And again, he's 17 years old, and he just struck out a bunch of 19- and 20-year-old batters and got the rest of them to ground out and hit soft pop-ups.
Okay.
What could you offer in terms of insight if he were here listening to your program?
Well, you know, Gary, that's a curious situation because you would assume, at least superficially, that a kid who's 17 goes out and has a great performance against kids who are obviously older than he is, you would think that would elevate him and make him feel even more confident and say, gee, I have a talent for this. I'm pretty good at this. But the way you're describing it, he's beginning to get a sense of, gee, is this really real? Is this going to fall apart? Is this his dream going to go up in smoke? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well,
Gary,
he does have confidence when he's playing and on the mound.
Yep.
And you know, things don't bother him, including pressure. He doesn't rattle.
Good.
He could have bases loaded, one out. Somebody could get a shot off into the gap. In fact, there was only one player in that game that I'm talking about that got a decent hit. Nobody else barreled him up. And then he strikes the next two guys out in the end of the inning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all of this talk, I think, by the people in the system that, you know, the kids hear, and he is a kid. He's playing against men. The kids hear about, you know, well, gee, I don't throw 95 yet. I'm only in the 80s. I may not be good enough to get to the school that I want to get to and get the education that I want as a backup plan. And all of those pressures and factors apply. But on the field, he's totally confident. So I'm just a little surprised that there's even an inch of doubt creeping into his thought process. And I don't know, as his father, what to do about it. I heard your program. I'm calling in.
Gary, here's what I would suggest you do with your son. And as you said, he seems to at least, and again, I don't know him, never seen him play, never talked to him, seems to have all the earmarks of a kid whose career is on the rise. But as you said, and smartly so, he's 17, he's still a kid. I would
Right.
suggest that you sit down with him and suggest to him that one of the ways to sort of help reinforce, you know, the fact that he's had some success as a pitcher and what he's done to have success is to literally sit down and just write like a one-page paper, a memo, just to sort of relive what he did and what he accomplished against that JUCO, because honestly, that becomes sort of a helps to reinforce in his brain, in his mind, in his self-esteem, just how good he was. And it just is, if he has more and more of these outings, every time he does sort of a journal entry or a diary entry, that'll help reinforce that this was no fluke, it was no mistake. This is him doing it. And, you know, I do believe that kids often, fall apart. They say, oh, that was just hard to believe, it happened, and maybe next time I won't be so good. But the idea, of course, is to develop a sense of consistency at the higher levels. And I do believe if he takes some time, you know, just a few minutes to write this down, either as a journal or as a blog or something, it's going to help build up a longer sense of like, yeah, I guess I really can do this, and I am pretty good at it, and I can't wait till I'm 18 or I can't wait till I'm 19. But I think that's something to at least suggest to him. If he doesn't want to do that, then I would just take him off to the side and just have a nice, pleasant father-son chat with him, and you reinforce to him just how good he was, and to give him some sense of perspective of what he's doing is really extraordinary. And he needs to become comfortable, if you will, with his success. I would try that.
That's good advice. We have had some talks about the subject.
Yep.
And
Gary,
I don't know what to do. I mean, should I have him read your book?
Well, you could do that as well. I would strongly urge you because, as I said a few minutes ago, a lot of kids today, they don't really they know about the mental side of sports, but they don't really prepare themselves as to what that means. And I would suggest that again, I'm a big believer in athletes self-evaluating after the effect and to be objective about their performance and to write down their impressions. To sort of have that as an ongoing journal or diary that helps reinforce just how good they were. And if it wasn't a good performance, then they can sit down and figure out, okay, why wasn't I good and what kind of adjustments do I need to make? But in your son's case, I think he's the perfect candidate to start doing this and to get in the habit of doing it because it's only going to serve him well as his baseball career continues. Gary, good luck. Forgive me, but I got to run on to other calls. But, good luck. I think this is something where your son could really benefit from.
I think he might benefit from speaking to you. Is there even offline, is there something that you could provide in terms of a phone number or an email that you could correspond with you?
All you got to do is go to my website, which is askcoachwolf.com, and you can certainly find a way. It's posted there. You can contact me via email.
Is there a phone number there, Rick?
I'd rather not do that on the air, Gary. But
I understand.
Yeah, just email me at askcoachwolf.com. I'll be glad to get in touch with you.
I'm trying to hear you as I'm driving. Ask what?
Askcoachwolf.com.
Askcoachwolf.com.
You bet.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks.
I hope to speak to you soon.
Great. Thanks, Gary. Take care. Let's move on. Let's go to Tom and Brick. Tom, good morning. You're on the fan.
Rick, I tell you, it gets more frustrating all the time. Youth sports is like listening to a stock market report. You know, sports was a way for the underdog to make it. It started with prize fighting,
yeah,
and baseball, then football. But the most valuable thing about youth sports is preparing them for life. And sports are part of it, but I'm thinking maybe it's becoming too big of a part.
Well, Tom, I'm not really quite sure. I mean, I think we all agree and share the sentiment that if kids have the experience and the joy of playing sports, particularly team sports, they are going to benefit from those so-called intangibles like learning how to play with teammates and have a sense of dedication and sacrifice and going through adversity. Those are the benefits of sports, and I happen to be a huge, huge proponent of them, and I felt that way for a long time, and I still think that's what we want as parents to our kids to go through. Anyway, Tom, thank you for the call. Let me move on to John over in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. John, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. Great show as usual, and I had to call in after I heard that father talking about his son.
Yes.
And I was just a little bit surprised that you didn't tell him that he has to sit down with him and make sure that this young man really, really wants to play, because that exact same situation happened to me and my son for years. I kept on asking him at every level, in middle school, in high school, all the way through until he finally made the decision that he didn't want to play, even though he succeeded at every level he did. Everybody said how great he was, and the coaches were saying, we just don't know how what his his up level was, where his ceiling is. That was the thing. They said, we just don't know. But the ceiling was, is does he really want to do it?
Yes.
Because if that father's on the phone, have him sit down with his son. Or if it's a daughter, too, sit down with them and make that conversation. And during the course of it, every year, I said, son, you want to quit? You can quit anytime you want. Because the investment for us isn't that great. But in that junior year, I sat him down. I said, you're signing a contract now. The contract is that you want to go further with this, because we had a recruiter, and he said yeah, and you know what, he was young, so he signed the contract not knowing exactly what it was, and when push came to shove, he just didn't want to go any further. But I had a contract, and I had a contract with somebody who didn't actually know what a contract was.
Well, so even John, let me interrupt there, because I that issue about whether or not a kid, and we all know that there are lots of young athletes who are blessed with great physical skills, and they have to be they shine right away in their sports. But as you said, to your point, there are lots and lots of kids who enjoy the competition. They know they're good at it, but they have no real desire to either work at it or to take it to the next level. And I can't begin to tell you how many parents have come to me over the years and have said, Rick, my kid is a terrific talent in soccer or basketball, baseball, but they don't seem to have the inner drive, the inner motivation to want to go on to keep working at their sport. What can I do to motivate them? And I said to moms and dads, and I think they're kind of frustrated and bewildered, I said, I'm sorry, but unless your kid has that inner core drive that really propels them to the next level, there's nothing you can say to them or try to convince them. In fact, you'll probably screw up your relationship with them.
Oh, no.
If you push it.
Rick, let me just, before you cut me off, please, thank you for letting me talk. But he did. In other words, I never pushed them. It was never a push. It was always, here's what you want to train? You can train. You want to leave? You can leave. And he goes, I want to train. So I think the goal was to achieve what he wanted. But the goal wasn't to achieve what all the people around him, because I'm a dad. I don't know. I mean, I said I'm a dad from afar. That's what I called myself. I'm a dad from afar. Just, you know, tell me what you want to do. But what I thought it was going to be like a great learning lesson. Oh, you're going to sign a contract, and then this way you'll... No, it's a kid. So the kid said to himself, you know what? I did as much as I could. I had a championship. I was great when I went to New England. Now, this thought process, but I just don't. And I think what happened was, basically, he looked at all the players that at the level above him, and he just kept on saying, well, I could never be that good. So even though...
But, John, that happens. I mean, you know, kids...
Yeah, I know. I sat there, and I watched it. And you know what? Yeah, and so, you know, having that agreement with your parent, at least it allows your parent to get pissed. And we can get pissed when the kid says he wants to play, you invest.
Let me say this, and you're right, I'm up against the clock here.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, but your story is a good one, John, and I think a lot of parents have to cope with this as well. Remember, we want our kids to play sports because it's fun and they enjoy it. And whether he or she, you know, begins to advance up the ladder, that's great. But if it no longer seems to be fun, or they don't seem to think that they're ever going to be good enough to get to the next level, despite what the parents are, they have invested, if the kid, you get the sense that your son at age 16, 17 is not going to go next level or is not interested in going next level despite whatever, you know, agreements or contracts you have. It's their life. And if they don't want to do it, don't try to belittle their sentiments or don't try to, to poo-poo their feelings. It's their life. And they may say, I've done this, I've liked it, it's been fun, but now I'm time for me to walk away from it. That's fine. You can have that conversation with them. Understand it's still them, and they know what how they feel about their whole role and their sense of competitive sports. And it does happen. And it happens, quite frankly, happens to a lot of kids, particularly at the high school level. All right, let me take a timeout to have your update with Marco. When I return, go right back to your calls. And, of course, don't forget that it is Football Sunday at 9 o'clock this morning as the NFL playoffs are upon us. Make sure you stick around and get all the insights from Mark Melusis and Dave Deal. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, if you want to track me down and talk about sports psychology or sports parenting, obviously go to AskCoachWolf.com. And if you'd like to have me come out and speak to your sports organizations, either on sports parenting issues or sports psych, just go to AskCoachWolf.com for more details. I am discussing primarily sports psychology this morning, and I am hoping you order a copy of my new book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. This really does represent the culmination of more than 35, 40 years of my work and research and hands-on experience in dealing with top athletes. And you can order the book right now on Amazon. Our number, of course, is 1-877-337-6666. Let's get back to our calls. Let's go up to White Plains. John, good morning. You're on the fan.
Rick, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John.
Rick, just listening to some of the callers that you had.
Yes.
Listen to your shows on Sundays. Very informative. In terms of a lot of these teenagers who do excel in sports, whether it's baseball, football, regardless of what it is, do you ever get the notion that maybe some of these parents are just putting so much pressure on these kids that they want it more than their own kid? You know, it's mind-boggling to think that you have to persuade a 16, 17, or 18-year-old kid to stick with playing a sport that they excel at. You know, to me, if they're not interested, they're not interested.
John, this is the essence. In fact, just during the break, I was talking with Brian Roscona, our board op, this morning about this very issue, because the fact of the matter is we've become so swept up as sports parents today. When we see our youngster, if he or she, you know, seems to have a glimmer of talent in their particular sport and they seem to progress and they seem to do great when they're early on, by the time they get to be in high school or, you know, 16 or 17 years old, and now the stakes are getting more and more are deeper and deeper, and they're beginning to think, well, maybe I am a shot at getting a college scholarship or going pro, whatever, or making the Olympic team. These kind of things, the parents, of course, are thrilled, excited. We put so much time, energy, some emotional support to our youngster. But at the end of the day, you sit down with the kid, and the kid says, you know, this is a lot of fun, but really I'd like to spend more time with my friends in school, or, you know, have the time to not have to go to practice and maybe have to go to some parties or sleepovers or stuff like that and do the regular kind of things that most teenage kids do. And when those kind of conversations begin to crop up with the kid, you as a parent have to come to grips with the fact that, you know, as I said, it's not about you and
right.
your dreams. It's about the kids' dreams. And kids are these days are pretty outspoken about how they want to spend their time, what is important to them. And it may not be, you know, making that elite travel team or making, you know, the Olympic team or whatever. They just have
right.
their own sense.
But, Rick, we talk about, you know, there's all this talk about AAU sports and summer league teams and all this involvement. I mean, years ago you didn't have dozens, if not hundreds, of travel teams. Now you have these parents that are almost forcing their kids. See, the point of what I'm trying to tell you is that I feel like the parents are the ones who need to be psychologized.
Well,
right? They're the ones who need to sit in a room with somebody and explain to them, you know, this is what you're doing to your child. You know, if your kid wants to play the piano, if your kid wants to be part of the debate team after school, you know what, let them do that. You know, why the pressure of this whole thing of getting a scholarship? You know, every once in a while I go on Kevin, the News 12, the Lohud Twitter accounts, right?
and you see kids now who they have this big spectacle of where they're going to college.
Right.
And years ago, Rick, and you know, you played ball, I played ball. You only did that when you went to a big time D1 school. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden you got kids who are committing to these small Division III schools, and you sit there and you say to yourself, when did this change? When did this happen? And I feel like a lot of that has to do with the pressure that these parents are putting on their kids. Or better yet, that kids want to make their parents feel so proud that this is what I'm doing. And really, in essence, these kids might not be that interested. I mean, their parents just might be putting so much pressure on them that they don't want to do what they want to do. They want to do what their parents tell them to do.
Well, this is true, and it is part and parcel of the concerns today about sports parenting and the underlying concerns of sports psychology. And John, you were right. For a lot of people have said that, you know, kids today, especially kids who are good athletes, their parents are so proud. It's almost like they're showing their kids off, like in an extension of the parents' own ego. And like, see how good I am as a parent. My kid's going to this D3 program, or is recruited as a walk on at this school. I mean, please, it's not about you, mom and dad. It's about your kid. And I think that lesson is often overlooked. And in the whole crush of sports parenting today and sports psychology, that's where you do find kids eventually becoming burned out and saying, I don't want to do this anymore because it's just too much effort.
Absolutely. Rick, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Happy New Year.
John, thanks for the call. And John really does touch on a very important concept that as a sports parent, you really have to be able to sort of keep your distance. Yes, you want to be there for your kid. You want to be supportive and do the right thing and so on and so forth. But, you know, don't become that overbearing parent that is all about you and your kid just trying to gain your approval. Because at some point that equilibrium is going to change. And you might be surprised and heartbroken. Your kid says, I don't want to do this anymore. I was very happy playing at my high school, but I don't want to play in college. It's not something I want to continue. And that could cause major disruption for any kind of family that has put so much time and effort and energy into developing that kid. But again, I keep coming back to this, you know, listen to your child. Listen to what they're telling you. Be more concerned about what they want to do with their lives than what you want to do with theirs. It's as simple as that. Let's move on. Let's go to Mike out in East Rockaway. Mike, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mike.
You know, interesting calls. I was just going to say what the previous caller was saying about parents and this and that. Rick, I'll start out. You had him on your show a year ago. Al Gouldis and Bob Hirschfield's friend.
Yes.
Gave his college thesis at the gym my senior year in 72, mm-hmm. baseball. Of the physics of throwing a baseball or hitting a baseball.
Correct.
Amazing. Amazing. And they have input from good coaches, positive reinforcement. You know, Rick, you said it on previous shows too. Some parents get so preoccupied with Division I as if 2 and 3 were overshadowed. And that's not the case. College ball is a different animal. College ball. And a child may not be, you know, profiled at a certain height and weight to play D1. And, you know, some parents, I should still write a book, Rick. It's getting worse as the years go by. I've said for years, when a child, whether it's your daughter or son, reaches high school, they have to stand on their own 2 feet and do well in academics, obviously, and do all the right things. I just had a son who graduated a good school upstate. He was a wide receiver. Dean's List. I know friends whose kids do well in school and play sports, but it doesn't have to be the profile of a D1. And sports psychology, positive reinforcement, I think, Rick, from good coaches and how your son or daughter approaches the game and tries to get, the good mindset in certain tough situations on the ball field, you know?
Mike, I could agree with you more. And obviously, you've had success, obviously, with your kids in terms of athletics and academics and trying to, obviously, to keep a balance with them. And, you know, I agree with you. And, Mike, as always, thanks for the call. You know, the fact remains that when kids get to be in high school, when they get to be 14, 15, 16 years old, you know, and standing on their 2 feet, kids are smart. They can look for themselves and see how they stack up against their competitors, whether it's in a high school varsity situation or a travel team. They get a sense of where they stack up, and they're smart enough to realize that that's just one team or one high school. There must be other, you know, hundreds, thousands of other teams and kids with the same dream. They begin to figure it out for themselves. just as we did when we were in high school ourselves. So never discount the kids and their ability to perceive what's going on around them, and just as I say, how they compare and contrast with their competition. All right, let me take a timeout. I'll be back with more. Stay with me. Well, it's not ready for Ed Randall just quite yet. I don't think we're talking baseball when it's 4 degrees outside. But this is Rick Wolf, and we're all talking this morning about sports psychology. We will hear from Ed and see Ed soon enough. In any event, I've been delighted to talk for this hour about my new book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed, which is available now. You can go to Amazon and get it. It's a paperback or in Kindle form. And, one of the previous callers, Mike from East Rockaway, mentioned Al Goldis, who I had the pleasure of playing for many years ago in the summer leagues in the Atlantic Collegiate Baseball League. Al was one of the kind people in baseball who gave a wonderful blurb for my book. Al, of course, went on to become a Hall of Famer as a baseball scout. I have quotes here, endorsements from Jerry DePoto, the GM of the Seattle Mariners, John Hart, a former GM of the Texas Rangers and the Cleveland Indians, Joe McElvain, of course, the former GM of the Mets and the Padres, Mark Shapiro, who was with the Indians for a long time, now is the president and CEO of Toronto Blue Jays. So, yeah, I've been blessed to have so many wonderful people along the way, and, of course, my mentor, Harvey Dorfman. My book is about full of those questions that I thought any athlete would be interested in knowing more about. They want to use their mental preparation to give them an edge over their competitors. There's the chapter here about mental cue cards, which I learned from Harvey Dorfman and how important they are. I think people will be surprised to know how many the top athletes today use mental cue cards as a form of preparing themselves to get themselves to hopefully get into the zone before each game. I talk about pregame anxiety and how the top athletes learn to not avoid pregame anxiety but actually to embrace it, because it shows that their body and their mind are sharp and attuned and ready to play at their top level. Self-talks, you hear a lot about self-talks. You know, every time you see a big league pitcher in a close-up in a game on television, you'll see a pitcher, like, it seems like he's having a conversation with himself. No, he's not. He's not delusional. He's just basically going through a mental rehearsal of what he has to do to make sure he stays within his groove to what he wants to accomplish. And this goes back to his pregame, his visualization techniques as to what he's trying to accomplish each time he takes the mound. Athletes of all different sports do the same kind of thing, these self-talks, particularly when things get tight. Anyway, all these issues and topics are hopefully explained in a very clear way in my book. And as I said, I would encourage anybody who's involved in sports, either as an athlete themselves or as a parent or as a coach, to go out and pick up a copy. Again, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of The Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Brian Rascona. Please stick around for Football Sunday. I'll see you next week right here on The Sports Edge.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.